just being a part of this labor movement in this given moment is rewarding itself. And we constantly have to remind ourselves to serve the need for our leaders of tomorrow.
Welcome to the Ronin Project Podcast, a show about Asian Americans in politics, rocking the boat, breaking the rules, and taking on the big fights. I'm your host, Bill Wong. Buckle up, it's time for Ronin's to Roll program. Hello, Ronin Nation. Welcome back to the Ronin Project Podcast. Today's guest is Brian Ha, the Director of Government Relations at the California Faculty Association. CFA is a union of 29,000 teaching and research faculty, psychological counselors, librarians, and coaches employed at the California State University system. Brian leads political, legislative, and political organizing efforts for CFA. Before joining the CFA leadership team, Brian was a lobbyist for the California Federation of Teachers, where he specialized in higher education policy and budget. His work there included guiding legislation pertaining to California community colleges, University of California, women's rights, social justice, civic engagement, quality education for our students, fairness, living wage for teachers, and access to affordable housing into statute. Prior to CFT, Brian worked for the United Ways of California as Director of Government Affairs, Director of Field and Advocacy at the Faculty Association of California Community Colleges, and Director of Advocacy for the American Heart Association. Brian spent nearly a decade with the California State Senate, serving as chief consultant to the Joint Committee on the Arts and as legislative consultant to Senator Jack Scott. While at university, Brian was student body president at California State University, Los Angeles, and participated in the Senate Fellowship Program. Brian has devoted his career to working with public service organizations as they sought to be active participants in the political process in California. Without a doubt, Brian is a power player in California politics and a rising star among union leaders. Welcome to the show, Brian. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be on the show.
Let's start off with some of your biggest wins this year for faculty. Can you elaborate on some of your recent victories in the state budget and bills you led to passage last session?
Sure. In terms of budget win, we settled on a contract negotiation. At CFA, we diligently worked to protect faculty health, safety, and rights guaranteed under our collective bargaining agreement. Our contract serves the interests of both faculty and the university, as faculty working conditions are also student learning conditions. Our members overwhelmingly ratified our new contract, one that reflects our commitment to addressing anti-racism and social justice issues and working conditions of the faculty in the CSU. Prior to settling, CFA members were working without a contract for almost 2 years. We had some losses. We also achieved successes. We had $100 million literally taken from us that would have guaranteed an additional 1% raise for our members. But next year, you can expect my team to work on restoring that money, possibly a lot more. This year, budget also includes $30 million for student mental health services and additional $6.5 million for rapid rehousing for houseless and housing insecure students, a one-time $10 million investment in faculty professional development, and more than $55 million towards ethnic studies curriculum expansion. CFA supports all of these listed initiatives, and it further shows the governor and the legislature recognize the needs of our students by providing funding that directly supports them. In terms of legislative win, we enjoyed another successful year. We got 4 bills signed into law. We decided to take on far more pressing issues, such as taking on big oil, protecting our environment, and continued our work on addressing police reform. 4 of our bills signed into law include AB 1997 by Assemblyman Mike Gibson, creating a task force to develop a report on emergency response program at the CSU. Second bill was SB 886 by Senator Scott Wiener, University Housing Development Project for faculty, students, and staff. Third, AB 655 by Assemblyman Osh Kara, Law Enforcement Accountability Act. And last one, SCA 10 by Senate Pro Tem Tony Atkins, Reproductive Freedom, which became Proposition 1 in next Tuesday's election.
That's an amazing record. It's always quality above quantity. And then for our listeners out there, it's hard to put into context, but these were big wins. And I think more importantly, not only are they just wage-related wins, they are wins that go across overarching cultural and social issues that are very important to the state of California at this time. In fact, CFA is an outspoken advocate for equity and inclusion.
I have had some very difficult jobs, but I honestly can tell you this is one of the best jobs I've ever had. At CFA, they really value staff and staff work. They are so kind, every one of our leaders, starting from my president, Charles Toombs, all the way to my political and legislation chairman, Stephen Fillings, to some of our legends at CFA like Cecil Canton. But we have so many members here that really appreciate the work that we do as staff.
That's very cool. That's a dream.
Yeah.
For people who know you, they know that Dean Murakami, who was a great champion here in Sacramento, played a huge role in your success and political trajectory. His passing was a huge loss to the AAPI community and House of Labor. Can you tell us a little bit about Dean, how you met, and what were the big lessons he left you?
Of course. Dean was my best friend, mentor, and a father figure to me. Dean was a longtime and lifelong labor leader here in Sacramento. His work spans over 3 decades. Most people don't know this fact about Dean, but he was a rocket scientist. He obtained a PhD in psychology and used to run the NASA lab over at UC Davis. This was one of his first jobs. He sent mice to space to study their behaviors, which significantly helped NASA scientists and astronauts as they were sending humans to space. He then went on to securing a teaching job at the American River College. He would go on to become the longest serving president of the Los Rios College Federation of Teachers, also known as LRCFT. In short, and without getting too emotional, Dean taught me everything about labor politics. He also helped shape my career by mentoring me in every step of the way. His legacy will continue through my work and my children's lives, whom they referred as Grandpa Dean.
That's amazing. Dean was such a great leader. He instilled in a lot of us, and I can see it in how you carry yourself, he instilled a lot of courage in Asian American leadership. He was a outspoken advocate for ethnic studies. He was a coalition builder, and not only from, you know, labor and community, but also ethnic communities. He set such a tremendous example. People like that are the shoulders that we all stand upon, and the commitment that they made to making sure that Asian Americans have a voice, as well as a substantive part of the political process.
Yeah.
You know, he really deserves a lot of credit. And when he was around, there wasn't a lot of credit to go around. I mean,
yeah,
you know, he should have been recognized by the caucus, and we got to do a better job giving that type of recognition to the people that laid the groundwork for us.
Exactly. This is why I dedicated my award this year from the API Legislative Caucus to Dean. I had nothing but respect for his work, and just the fact that when he started within the labor movement, there wasn't even a handful. He would tell me he was the only one in the room.
Yeah.
And I believe that. But what it also made me realize was the struggle that he had to endure just to stay within this labor movement. And because he stuck around, he laid the path for someone like me to continue building on his path. You know, every time I think about Dean, I think about how much Asian Americans struggled dating back from the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s. Dean is fourth generation Japanese American. And growing up here in the United States, I've heard comments like, go back to your country. I came here when I was 10 years old. So I guess that statement applies to me. But someone like Dean, who's been here even longer than some of the other descendants, I think that's just amazing. And also meeting someone like you, Bill, the fact that you're still here mentoring me and the leaders of tomorrow, it's very comforting to me.
You're kicking some ass. That's what makes this all worthwhile. Seeing you guys succeed is just fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you, Bev, Aaliyah, people in the game, like that's all we wanted was more people in the game, and you guys are there.
Yeah. Just being a part of this labor movement in this given moment is rewarding itself. And we constantly have to remind ourselves to serve the need for our leaders of tomorrow.
Were there any specific like lessons or special stories?
Yeah, he taught me how to stand out. He taught me how to be unapologetic when it came to standing up against racism. Taught me to become a leader in social justice issues. He taught me how to always become that person who is passionate and who always serves the community with the interest of benefiting the lives of everyone.
I'm sure he was tremendously proud of you. When I see you in action, I think that Dean did such an amazing job, and you honor his memory so well with how you conduct yourself. For some of the older generation, it was always a struggle, but to see your generation do well, you've been honored by the Asian Pacific Islander Legislative Caucus. I've seen you at exclusive political events like the Speaker's Cup, which not everybody gets invited to. And CFA is such a formidable union in the state of California. What's it like as an Asian American to be in the room where the big decisions are made and on the greens where the heavy hitters play?
It's a tremendous honor to represent CFA in the room. As the saying goes, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. As one of the few Asian Americans in the room, I used to feel like I have to try harder. I have to try harder just to stand out and make a point, just to fit in. But I stopped thinking about having to exceed expectations from others. I've learned how to adapt in any situation and developed an unapologetic attitude, as according to Dean, when it came to representing my CFA members. Asian Americans are no longer simply part of the status quo. We are the status quo.
That's some great stuff. There's a growing number of Asian Americans in this space, labor and politics, but not that many. What do you think we need to do to grow more Asian American labor and political leaders?
We need to recruit more young minds and capital staffers into labor. We need to prove that this is our moment. There is a place for Asian Americans in labor. Labor is the driving force on several policy, budget, and political decisions. I want our leaders of tomorrow to consider a life and career within the labor movement. This is where decisions are made, and the movement that can hold elected officials accountable. And just to be a part of this movement will be a great accomplishment if you can get in this world and thrive in it. And you will have folks such as Dee Murakami, who has already made an impression for us. And now it's my time to carry on the tradition so that we can open up labor jobs to more Asian Americans in the future.
If you were talking to some young Asian coming out of college, what would you tell them?
5 tips. Pursue a life that you can be proud of. Seek a career that you can advance without any struggle. Be passionate. You need to fight for the voiceless. And you also need to have a mindset that you no longer have to try hard just to fit in, because we have grown into a force. And this is especially pertaining to Asian Americans graduating from college who are seeking an internship or a fellowship. I want to let these folks know that you can have a place within politics, within labor, within any settings that you want to continue or pursue a career in.
You were selected for the Senate Fellowship. It's a very elite program. I think there's 17 fellows chosen out of pools of 500 to 700 applicants, if not more. It's highly competitive, and it's a very well-respected program. How was your experience as a fellow, and how did it shape you in this work?
It gave me an interest in seeking a career in politics. I caught the bug on the first year. I moved from Los Angeles back in 2001 to accept the fellowship in the Senate. And I honestly hated Sacramento. The weather came here in August, and I thought it was hell, literally. And I thought, I can't do this no more than 10 months. Whenever this program ends, I'm back home. But I developed an interest that has kept me here for the past 22 years or so. And I love my job. I love what I do. And if I could start this all over again, I would not change a thing. I have experiences in working inside the Capitol. I have experiences working for a nonprofit. I have experiences even at certain corporations. But it landed me within CFA, which is a very powerful union within the California labor world. And I have been blessed in what I've been doing. And I continue to remind myself that I have a great career, great job, great organization who backs me, and I get to return the favor in doing everything within my power to representing my members at CFA.
Speaking of your members of CFA, what do you think are the challenges coming into the next year for your members?
It's the budget, Bill. We had $100 million literally taken away from us, and I am still losing sleep over this. There was an agreement made between the legislative leaders and the governor, and that money was taken from us at the 11th hour. I don't think anything like that has ever happened to me as a staffer. I'm talking about over the span of 22 years or so, I have never had an agreement taken away from us at the 11th hour. So next year, we will be fighting harder. My team, in fact, will be fighting harder to restoring that money and hopefully rebuild hope for my members.
Yeah, give our listeners a little bit of context, because overall, I think the general perception is that faculty is underpaid, and you guys have been without a contract for a long time. So, I mean, what kind of like real life impact, if you could put it into normal words, is that for faculty? How does that really affect them?
Yeah, I mean, some of our lecturers, they struggle. They struggle a lot. Mind you, we have worked without a contract for the past 2 years. 2 years is within the time frame of when we enter this pandemic, and we're just slowly getting out of it. So the working conditions, you can imagine, it was horrible. And when we came back to work, many of our members still didn't know what type of working conditions they had to return back to work. And there is the stigma that teachers and professors, they don't work 365 days a year. They think people are overpaid. That is completely false. This is one of the hardest professions out there. And I challenge everyone, whoever don't understand what teaching is, stand in front of a classroom, in front of 25 yelling kids or 25 grown kids or grown young minds trying to challenge you every day. This is one of the toughest jobs out there. And I commend all of our teaching forces, staff at the universities and also K-12. I commend them for their passion, for their commitment, and for what they do for our youth every day.
These are people with master's degrees and PhDs, and they could be making so much more money doing other stuff, just making money, but instead they've chosen a career path of service and education. And to be quite honest, California wouldn't be where we are today without the level of higher education that we have available to the public, and at a very affordable rate. So yeah, the CSUs are critical to California's economic success.
And we produce the most number of teachers, nurses, police officers, firefighters. If you name every state jobs out there, we have some connections to these mass careers. And you're absolutely right. Many of our members with master's and PhDs, they could make a lot more money if they chose another career path. But most of them want to give back to the communities where they are from. If you look at some of our growing diversity within the CSU, it's just an amazing feeling. The fact that some of our faculty members are starting to look like our student population is something that I can really be proud of. When I went to college back in, I'm dating myself now, 1995 to 1999, at Cal State LA, I saw that diversity. But in other universities like CSU, Chico, or Humboldt, I don't imagine that was the case. But today, after almost two decades later, I can see us transforming into the direction that I feel comfortable, and I want this trend to hold.
You know, maybe it's my own personal bias, but having spent years in politics and hiring people right out of college, I always thought that CSU produced tremendous students that came out of the CSU system. They were a lot more scrappy, a lot less entitled than students coming out of the glory schools that are out there. I made it a point of actually hiring CSU grads because they just brought in a much better work ethic than some of these other students that went to prestige schools. I don't think I ever hired anybody from Harvard or Stanford. But that's a little bit of my bias toward Cal, is I would never hire anybody from Stanford. That's probably socially wrong, but that it is what it is. But, you know, to be very honest, the CSU grads, they were scrappy. You know, they were definitely down to do the work.
Exactly. I won't judge you, Bill. Never.
Any last words of encouragement for the Ronin Nation out there?
Yeah. As a labor lobbyist by trade and heart, I would be remiss if I didn't end this podcast by plugging in labor. Labor is often described as a central force on political issues and in our communities. Today, our work has evolved a bit. No longer solely focused on traditional union issues, these days, we are becoming the heart and conscience of our communities and our country. We've grown from our roots of empowering workers to negotiate for more favorable working conditions and other benefits through collective bargaining. We are now promoting social justice, fighting to end structural racism, working to protect our environment, and much more. Our roots continue to be deep and strong. We continue to champion workers' rights, but we are also passionate about racial and social justice. We need to ensure that our communities remain resilient and our voices are heard in the state.
That's a very powerful ending statement. That's a great way to end the show. Brian, thanks so much for being a guest on the Ronin Project podcast. Really good to have you.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, Bill.
Well, Ronin Nation, that's it for today's show. Thanks for listening in this week. We'll see you next time. If you are inspired by the exploits of the amazing Asian American badasses on the Ronin Project podcast and want to find out how you can learn more about politics or help Asian American candidates, click on the link in the show notes to join the Ronin Nation's national progressive movement to inspire, organize, and empower Asian Americans. Until next time, Ronins, roll program.